My name is Judith Coker. I was born in Maldon, brought up in Maldon, and I've always lived in Maldon or the district around.
Judith, can you tell me a little bit about your parents?
My mother was a Londoner, and my father was, I was going to say a Maldonian, but I don't know of him living anywhere else apart from Maldon. So he lived on Market Hill, and when he left school at 12, he worked as a butcher on Market Hill.
He left school at 12?
Yes. And he worked for the butcher that was opposite where he lived on Market Hill. My mother was a Londoner, and she was a milliner. Her job was a milliner. And my mother and father met simply because she was a friend of the daughter of the butcher where my father worked, and she came to Maldon for a holiday with her friend, and that's how they met.
And did you have a, was it a large family?
Their family or my
yours,
family?
Yours.
My family was seven children.
Seven?
Yes.
And where were you in that sense?
In the middle. Which means you're never anywhere, really. You're not one of the young ones, and you're not one of the old ones either.
And did you have a mix of brothers and sisters?
Yes, three brothers and three sisters. So I was the fourth sister.
What about school days?
Well, I started at All Saints for a year and then moved to Maldon Primary until I was 10, and then went to grammar school until I was 16.
So in those days, children left school at 16?
14 at the secondary schools. And 16 at grammar school, unless you went into the fifth year in order to go to college.
Right. Did you want to go to college yourself?
Yes, I did, because I wanted to teach maths.
Did you? So right from an early age, you that's what you wanted to do?
Oh, yes.
And so what happened after school?
I went to work in the post office for 11 years, until eventually I found a new college being opened in 1960, and so I went to college in a mansion. It was Brentwood College, but they hadn't built Brentwood College, so the county bought Haroldwood Mansion, and that's where I went to college for 2 years.
Tell me a little bit, going back, how did you get that job in the post office?
The headmistress of the grammar school said the postmaster had rung and said had they got anybody who was good at maths who would like a job in the post office. He was really asking for boys to help with the mail at Christmas, which they always did. The sixth form boys used to go and help the mail. And in the conversation with this lady, he said, have you got anybody who is good at maths who would like a job on the counter? And she said, yes, I have.
That was tailor-made for you, really, wasn't it? And what was it like working in the post office?
Busy, very busy. We did everything, all the different licences, like gun licences, dog licences, television licences, any licence that anybody needed. It was post office. Everybody banked at the post office.
They banked at the post office?
Yeah. You didn't have chequebooks or anything like that. You had money orders. We had postal orders and money orders.
So you're saying most people didn't have bank accounts in those days?
No. I didn't know anybody who had a bank account.
Right.
Nobody in my family had a bank account.
So the majority of people needed to go into the post office?
Yes. The post office was the hum of the town, really, hub of the town.
Yes.
Everybody went in the post office.
And where was the post office?
Just above the entrance to Market Hill, where Dorothy Perkins was eventually.
Right.
And most of the time I was the only female in the office.
Were you?
There was an elderly lady there when I first started who did the main accounts. But she was an elderly lady, and after about a year or so she retired. And eventually I did the main account as well as working on the counter. And we opened at 8:30 and closed at 6:30.
Oh, long hours.
No half days, every day. So you had to do shifts. So you sometimes started very early in the morning and finished about lunchtime, and sometimes you started work just before lunchtime and worked through till 8 o'clock in the evening.
Gosh. And how many days a week was the post office open?
6 days a week and 2 hours on Sunday.
Even Sundays?
Mm. 9 till 11 on Sunday.
Goodness me. It's almost unbelievable now, isn't it?
And even Christmas Day.
So what work was there on Christmas Day? What did you have to do then?
Mostly telegrams. So there was you and a postman. There was just the two of you in the office. I was on the counter and there was one postman who would deliver the telegrams if necessary.
So telegrams...
That's most of what you did.
That was a big part
and
of the
Unless
the
somebody wanted to post a parcel or come in for some stamps or something, yes, on their way to church, you know.
Yes, yeah. Did you get extra money for working on Sundays and Christmas Day?
Yes, you got paid for the 2 extra hours.
You did?
Yeah, because we worked 48 hours normally, which people don't work nowadays, but we worked 48 hours was our week's work. But if you worked on the Sunday, then you got extra.
Judith, what year did you start working in the post office?
At the end of 1948.
And you left...
1960.
Right. And you were saying just now the post office was open for a while on Christmas morning. So were there any days in the year when it was closed?
Good Friday and Boxing Day. That's all.
That's all?
Mm-hmm. Opened every other day, 2 hours on Sunday.
Yes.
And 8:30 to 6:30, yes, every other day. Yeah. No half days.
And when you were there, you made good use of your maths ability.
Mm.
Lots of money counting?
Oh, yes. Thousands of pounds.
Mm. And did you have to sort of agree at the end of each day?
Well, you all had your... Everybody on the counter had their own book and their own till. And the whole till was put in a great big safe when we went at night. And nobody used your... You took the whole drawer out and put it in the drawer. Mm. And that was yours. Nobody else had it. Mm. And then you balanced at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then all the books went to the back office where whoever was there balanced the whole office. So put all the books together and balanced the whole office. And then that book went to the postmaster upstairs.
And, of course, everything was done by hand.
Oh, yes.
Everything was written in the book by hand,
yes,
of course.
Yeah. We didn't have any calculators or anything like that. Right. Everything was done in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. There weren't such things as calculators.
So you've got a natural ability for maths.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I don't know where I get it from, but...
So moving on, so you got a place at college.
I did.
Was that 3 years?
2 years.
Two.
And the reason the county council opened this special college was because Brentwood College hadn't been built. They were only in the process of building it. And because the teacher training had changed from 2 years to 3 years, there was going to be nobody coming out of college in 1962. Because if you went to college in 59, you did 2 years and came out in 61. But if you went in 60, you didn't come out till 63. So there wasn't anybody coming out of college. Mm. So they decided to buy this mansion for 100 students so that they would have some people coming out of college in 62, because we had to do the 3-year course in 2 years. Mm. But a lot of the ones that came were already teachers, but they hadn't got a teaching certificate, and you weren't allowed to teach without a teaching certificate. So they were there really just to get a teaching certificate, not like me was starting from the beginning.
And were there a lot of applicants for places?
Oh, about 1,600 applicants for 100 places.
And you got one of those?
I got one of them, yes.
Yeah. So I imagine you really enjoyed your time at college.
Oh, yes, I did.
Where were you living? Was it a living in college?
No. I had to travel on 4 trains to get there.
Really?
I was well known at college for the person that caught 2 buses and 4 trains every day.
Gosh.
I went from home in Mill Road and there was the local bus that would take you to the railway station. So I got on that about 6:30 in the morning, went to the railway station, caught the train from Malden to Witham. It didn't go any further than that. So I got off at Witham, and because of it being early in the morning, all the trains went to Liverpool Street, and I wanted to go to Harold Wood. So I got off the train at Chelmsford, because that train was going to go straight to Liverpool Street. Got the next train from Chelmsford that would take me to Shenfield. Then I had to get off at Shenfield because that train would go to Liverpool Street to catch a stopping train from Shenfield to Harold Wood, and then either get on a bus or run to college. So I was well known. I was one of the youngest ones there. I was only 27, and the others were mostly in their 40s, had been teaching for a long time, but had no teaching certificate.
But what a journey. How long did the whole journey take?
Well, I had to be there by 9 o'clock, and I started from home at 6:30.
Wow.
Journey back home was easier because the trains were stopping to bring people home from London, whereas in the morning they were getting people to London as soon as possible for their jobs. So, four trains.
Gosh, and you did that for 2 years.
Yes.
Wow.
I didn't mind. I used to do my homework on the train.
And when you when you graduated from college, where was your first job?
My one and only job.
Right.
I went to Tiptree. I didn't have to find a job. The college found you a job. And they wanted me to go to a high school. So they applied for me to go to Colchester High School for Girls. But the headmistress there wouldn't have somebody like me because I had no degree.
Oh.
So they found me a job at Tiptree Secondary School, which I loved.
Good.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. We did eventually went comprehensive, but it was only a secondary school. When I went there, they didn't do exams. Children didn't do exams at secondary schools.
They didn't?
No, not in those days. Just the odd one, I think Great Badhoe did exams, but the Morton County Primary School, where my sisters went, they didn't do exams.
Really?
Not until quite recent years. And so Tiptree didn't do exams.
Right.
But it was a very good school, and a lot of children from Malden came to Tiptree to school if parents didn't want them to go to the local school, which was boys and girls separate, and we were mixed at Tiptree.
Right. Right.
And we had about a whole busload came from Malden to Tiptree.
And did you enjoy teaching girls and boys?
Yes, yeah.
Because and I expect you can look back and think that you encouraged so many children in the subject of maths and helped them to enjoy maths.
Yes, I loved it. And I was, well, the children used to say I was the quietest person in the school because I don't do shouting. I don't think you need to. My mother never shouted at us, and I didn't shout at them. But I didn't have any problem with the children at all.
How did you... Was there any need for sort of strict discipline?
Well, there was strict discipline in the school, but, you know, I didn't really need it. I didn't ever send anybody to the headmaster or anything, but I didn't need to. I didn't shout at them and they didn't shout at me. You don't treat children like that. I don't, anyway.
Judith, can we go back a little bit in time? You were a young girl during the war.
I was.
What stands out? What do you remember about the war?
The air raids, mostly. We knew the difference in sound between the English planes and the German planes.
Did
even
you?
Even as children, we knew it was...
Really?
I hated the doodle bugs. That they really upset me because we didn't know what was going to happen when they stopped. If the engine stopped, then they dropped. I can remember sometime during the war, it must have been 7 or 8, my mother had sent me across the road to the little shop in Mill Road to get something or other. On my way, the air raid had been on during the night and it's all clear in the morning, otherwise I wouldn't have been allowed out. But I was coming back from the little shop towards my house when I could hear a plane, and I knew it was a German plane because of the sound.
Yeah.
And I looked across the school field, because I lived opposite the school field. I looked across the school field, and coming from sort of the Beeley area was this plane. Mm. And it suddenly broke up into pieces.
No, really?
And a man jumped out with a parachute.
Oh.
And came across the school field. We had an ARP place on the school field. And one of the men from there came out, and I said, look, that plane has broke. There's a man in a parachute. And he came right over the school field, over Mill Road, over Fitch's Crescent. Fitch's Crescent was there then, it wasn't earlier. And then landed in the field just below Fitch's Crescent. And the ARP man rang the friary, which was used as a sort of hospital,
yeah,
if necessary, with beds. Yeah. And they came down and fetched this man. To me, he didn't look very much alive, I would say. He'd been hurt because he was just hanging in this parachute. And they took him away, but he didn't survive.
Oh, gosh. Goodness me.
All of us were out in the garden watching this parachute. It just sort of just missed our houses and the Fitch's Crescent houses.
That's an incredible memory.
Mm. That's one thing I remember about the war.
I guess it was quite a frightening time, really.
Yes. We used to sing. Five out of the seven of us joined the church choir. Gradually, as we came out. My sister a bit. One of my sisters only 20 months older than me, and we were brought up more or less like twins. We did everything together, except she went to primary one school, and I went to the grammar school. But I was the only girl in the family that went to grammar school. All the boys did, but none of the girls. But we went to Sunday school together, and we joined the choir at the church together, and we learnt to play the bells together, but we couldn't ring the bells until after the war, because you weren't allowed bells in wartime.
Yeah.
If you rang the church bells rung in the war, that meant invasion.
Of course.
So yes, we weren't allowed. So I was 12 when the war finished, so then I learnt to ring the bells.
Mm.
And then later I learnt to ring the handbells, and then I taught the handbell ringing. Mm.
So just to finish off talking about wartime, did you have shelters? Did you have a shelter?
We had one of the indoor shelters, like a big metal table.
Yes.
For some of the time, we slept in there, my sister and I.
You had seven children. There were seven children in the house. So.
Well, we were brought up like a little regiment of soldiers. We knew exactly what we had to do. In the middle of the night, we went to bed at 7:30, and we would be woken up about 10, or 10:30 with the raid, and you got up, and we all had something to do to bring. So my eldest sister brought the baby down, and my next brother brought the next girl down, and the next, and my older sister brought my brother down, which left me in the middle, of course.
Yes.
Take yourself down all on your own. Come on. And if there was a daytime raid, they used to drop incendiary bombs, and which were little bombs, but they were often dropped. And so it was arranged what we should do. We had sandbags ready, and me being not big enough to carry a sandbag, I was the one that had to crawl up the stairs, to the top of the stairs, and just stop and look and see if I could see any smoke anywhere, and shout to my brothers and sisters where I thought this bomb might be. And they got the sandbags to bring up. We used to practice doing this.
Right.
Until one day, my mother, being my mother, because she was a very clever lady, she was making the beds, and we used to use a bottle with water in, for a hot water bottle, because you couldn't buy a hot water bottle. Mm. And she dropped one on the floor, and it happened to be in the middle of a raid. We were downstairs, and she was upstairs making the beds, and she called out, "Incendiary!" And then I went up the stairs, and my brother wouldn't let me go. My oldest brother, "You're not going up there," he said, "you're not going up there."
Oh.
It didn't work.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
But an air raid at night, as I say, we all had somebody to bring downstairs apart from me. And my mother was a good pianist.
Right.
And she played the piano in the front room, and we all stood round and we sung at the top of our voices all the, not pop songs because they never heard of pop songs, all the hymns or things like Run Rabbit Run and We'll Meet Again and all the songs we sung in the middle of the night so that we couldn't hear the planes and the bombs dropping.
Yeah, good idea. So you were introduced to singing at an early age.
Yes.
And then you went on later to the choir, did you, at St Mary's?
Yes, I joined the choir when I was about 8. I went to Sunday school, and because the choir was depleted by the men going into the forces, and some of the women also, so the rector there, who lived in the big rectory, do you remember the rectory? Where Berridge House is, that was the rectory. And he lived there, and he came to the choir and said, is there anybody that would like to join the choir? So my sister and I, we were sort of 8 and 9, and we joined the choir. Mm. And I stayed in the choir till I sort of couldn't sing anymore very much. In my 20s somewhere, I think it was something to do with teaching.
Yes.
Using my voice, and I couldn't sing anymore. Mm.
So have you been associated with St Mary's ever since?
Ever since,
you've been
yes.
A church
yes.
member
yes.
ever since?
Yes, since I was 6.
Right.
So I was treasurer for 21 years.
Were you? Mm.
I didn't want to be church warden. I like doing things behind the scenes. Mm. I'm not one to do any talking. I had to be on the PCC because I was treasurer, but apart from telling them how much money we'd got, I didn't really say anything.
But again, being treasurer and dealing with
money
counting, that was your thing, wasn't it?
That was my thing, yes.
Great. You mentioned bell ringing.
Mm. Well, after the war, we were allowed to ring the bells, and I was 12. And we hadn't got any bell ringers left because the bell ringers had been elderly men, or they'd been in the forces and still weren't out of the forces. So one of the bell ringers from All Saints Church came down to teach us how to ring the bells. So my sister and I and my brother and one or two others, we were all children, and we all learnt to ring the bells. There's 6 bells at St Mary's. Mm. So we rung the bells before the service.
How long did it take you, or does it generally, how long does it take to learn bell ringing?
Well, people vary. I was so tiny I had to stand on 2 boxes to be able to reach the bells. But that also would be dangerous nowadays, standing on 2 little boxes. Yes. But no, it doesn't really take very long. Once again, it's very mathematical. I could remember all the numbers. You see, I rung number 1 because I wasn't big enough to ring anything other than number 1. That's the lightest bell. And then to ring the changes, number 1 was in the first position, then the second position, then the third position, then the fourth. And then you came all the way back, and I could memorise it all because of my figures.
Yes.
So I didn't really have much trouble with that. Mm. And we rung the bells until the tower became a bit unsafe and they wouldn't let us ring anymore.
Really?
Mm. So until...
How long, when did that happen then?
Oh, I don't know. What am I talking about? We're talking about when the war finished, was 45, wasn't it? I suppose sometime in the 50s.
Right.
We had to stop ringing for quite a long time.
Did you?
Mm. My sister and I often used to rush up to All Saints first thing in the morning and ring their handbells and then get on our bikes and chase down the road and be in St Mary's choir.
So when you had to stop at St Mary's, did you later on go back? Did they reinstate the bells?
We did, yes.
So you were
but it was a long, long time afterwards before the tower was built. And yes, I did ring them a bit afterwards when we came back. But as I say, once I became disabled, it wasn't really very clever.
And you mentioned handbells.
Yes. We found some handbells in the top of the tower, which we didn't know were there. And I had been ringing handbells with All Saints. They taught me how to ring the handbells. Then we found that we'd got some of our own. So we started using our own. We took them to Whitechapel, to the bell foundry, to have them repaired.
Right.
And then I started ringing as just one of the ringers with one of the older ladies was our teacher and taught me how to play, and after she'd stopped doing it, I took over.
And because again, the mathematical approach is helpful,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like the way I learned to play the piano. I didn't have any piano lessons. I worked it out mathematically, because my mother was a good pianist, but we hadn't got money for piano lessons, and with seven of us to keep, she didn't have time to spend an hour teaching us to play. So I worked it out from the written music mathematically, so I could tell what the chords were. Taught myself to play the piano until our choir master was Mr. Gilbert, Reginald Gilbert, who had St. Mary's Choir, Hoffman Choral Society, and the Youth Centre Choir. And he taught music. And he heard me playing with one of his pupils, who was a friend of mine in the choir, and we were playing duets together at her house, and he came round to her house to give her a piano lesson. And he said to her mother, "Who's that playing the piano? Because that's not Joyce playing. There are two of them." And she said, "It was me." And he came through. He said, "I didn't know you could play the piano." I said, "I can't. I just play what I've worked out." "I'll teach you," he said. I was at the post office, weren't earning about £2 a week, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, "No way could I afford piano lessons."
Yeah.
"Doesn't matter," he said. "I'll teach you to play piano."
Really?
So he taught me to play the piano.
Wow.
He said he reckoned I was about grade 3 by teaching myself. And then I went on to grade 5.
Mm.
And then I took the theory exam for music. But he retired then, so I didn't get as far as grade 6 because he retired and went.
Did you ever move on to play the organ?
Yes.
Did you?
Yes. I liked playing the organ. Mr. Gilbert said, "Would I like to play the organ?" So I played the last hymn for Evensong. But the priest we had at that time wasn't very keen on. He paid an organist to play, and he wanted the organist to play, you know. And so that came to an end. But I did enjoy playing the organ. But while I was teaching, I played clarinet.
Oh, my goodness, what a busy lady you were.
Oh, I'm always busy. We had, at Tiptree, we had a music teacher started a wind band. And some of the instruments are more difficult to play than others. We didn't have any strings. It was all a wind band and orchestra. And the children playing the clarinet were finding it very difficult. So I said to Barbara, the music teacher, "I'll go and get a clarinet and I'll learn to play." So I went and bought myself a clarinet. I had to teach myself once again by working it out, by mathematics. But it encouraged the teachers, because were having lessons and they could blow theirs better than I could, and to be better than your teacher.
Yes.
Gave them a bit of a lift, you know. They used to tell me what to do, you know.
Yes,
yes, you want this chord, you know. Because they had lessons and I had to teach myself. So if I went wrong, they told me, you know. Which helped them.
Obviously, yes, obviously.
And we had a wonderful band.
Did you?
At school. We played in all sorts of things.
So were you the only teacher in the band?
Yes, I think so. One of the teachers. Barbara, I don't think any of the others played. No, I don't think any of them did.
As you say, that must have really encouraged the students, the children.
Yes. One year, I don't remember which year it was, but two of the men from Colchester in the army, who were bandsmen in the army, came to our school and knew we'd got this band, and they also went to Colchester schools. So we decided to have a week's music. And so the first week of the summer holidays, we met at school, we slept at school. The children in our band stayed at school. The children from the Colchester schools who played came, and they had 100 of us lived in school for a week. I slept in the deputy head's office. The others slept in classrooms and places. And we gave a concert at the end of the week.
Brilliant.
Wonderful. Brilliant.
Yes. So you had a whole week of music. Judith, let's talk about drawing, your drawing. When did it start? Because you're a very talented artist.
I suppose it started soon after I left school. I didn't have any lessons. I just found I could do it. So I drew St Mary's Church. That was the first thing I drew. But that was a bit later on, I think, several years after school. And I found that was what I was interested in. So I just sat in the churchyard and drew the church.
Did you prefer drawing to painting?
Yes.
You did?
And I still do. Mm. I do paint, but watercolour, not oils. I don't like oils. Don't like all this splashing it on heaps. No, it's got to be precise for me. So it has to be watercolours.
I believe you knew Charlie Tate quite well.
I did know Charlie Tate. Charlie Tate's wife taught me at grammar school when she was Miss Hewlett, and she was one of the English teachers at grammar school. She then married Charlie Tate, who I knew anyway. And she had three daughters. They had three daughters. And he worked at Morden Council, the secondary school. She taught at the grammar school. Well, much, much later, when I was teaching myself at Tiptree, Mrs. Tate came to teach at Tiptree. So she was my teacher and my colleague. Mm. So I got to know the Tates very, very well through her and through Charlie. And when they took a coachload of children to Holland for a holiday, they said, would I like to go with them? I'd never been abroad. Would I like to go with them? So I went with them with a whole crowd of school children from Morden Secondary School, which I never ever went to anyway.
And obviously Charlie Tate's a very well-known artist here in Morden. So I believe you went to some of his classes?
Yes, I went to his classes at the Friary. He asked me if I would go just because I could already do it. It might encourage some of the others to do it. While we were there at these classes, he decided we'd do some life drawings. So he got a boy to come and sit for us to draw, which I quite enjoyed doing it. The following week, we had a girl came to do it. After that, for some reason, and I don't remember why, but I didn't go back. I think I must have been ill, because I was always ill anyway. I didn't go to the class. But evidently, the next week, they were drawing this couple to send up to the Daily Mail Children's Art Exhibition. Little did I know, he took my two pictures, which I hadn't done specially for the exhibition, and sent them up to the Daily Mail exhibition, and I was accepted.
Really?
So I've got a certificate somewhere that said...
Gosh.
I was certificate. So there was one boy in Chelmsford. I didn't know who it was, but I was told there was one boy in Chelmsford had one of his and mine.
So your work was accepted for their exhibition?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you... You've drawn a lot, you've painted quite a lot. Did you sell your work any time?
I sold mostly my paintings, because that's really what people want. I have drawn, done drawings for people where they got married at a particular church and wanted a drawing of it, that sort of thing. But I didn't actually sell them. I just drew them for friends or gave them away to people. But the paintings I put into exhibitions, like the Purley Art Exhibition and the Lankford Art Exhibition, and I haven't got any I can show you apart from that because I sold them all. I have got a book of some paintings, but the best ones, of course, were all sold.
And having looked at your folder of drawings there, you obviously love drawing buildings, yes. Particularly churches.
Yes, churches, castles, nice buildings, but buildings that are a little different from others, old buildings and that's got something about them. I mean, one of them in there is this flat. When I came here, my front door didn't look like everybody else's front door. It was like the original front doors, because everybody had them changed, and I wanted mine changed so it looked like everybody else's. So I sat over there and drew this bit with the two doors side by side, one like I wanted and one like mine was, took it over to Heybridge, to the place where they make doors and things, and took my picture with them and said, "This is my house. I don't want that door. I want one like that." So they made me one like that.
Yeah, good.
It's useful if you can draw what you want.
So you've been drawing and painting for many years?
Oh, yes, many years. I drew when I was still at home, you know, yes.
And do you still draw?
Yes. I'm in the middle of drawing Burnham Church at the moment. Not that I've been to Burnham. I prefer to go there myself and draw it. But if I can't go there, then I can do it from a picture. Mm. And somebody who goes to Burnham Church has brought me a picture and...
So you've had, I imagine, quite a few commissions. People have asked you to draw things specifically for them.
Like the Vicar at All Saints asked me to draw his house. Mm. I think somebody thought I was casing the joint when I went. Because I was going round this house and sitting there and looking at the windows and looking at the doors and the shape of everything, you know. Mm. And somebody came, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm drawing that house."
So you have been and you are a very busy lady, what with teaching and drawing and music.
And bell ringing.
And bell ringing, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Never a dull moment.
No.
Now, the Queen's visit.
Yes.
The first Queen's visit was in 1971, wasn't
yes.
it? When you presumably were still teaching.
Yes.
And the second Queen's visit was
2012, when I'd retired.
And did you see the Queen?
Yes.
What did you do?
We went to the top of Market Hill. She was going to the town hall for tea and food and things, and people being presented to her in the town hall. And she walked through the high street, from the top of the high street down to Market Hill. And I took a group of children with me to the top of Market Hill, and we stood there waiting for the Queen to come. We stood for about an hour and a half, I think, waiting for the Queen to come, and she came right past where we were, which was nice, and one or two gave her flowers and things, and then she went into the town hall, and that was it, really.
Where did the children come from?
From the church children.
Church children?
Yeah.
St Mary's?
Yes, mostly, anyway. Mm. Any child sort of comes with me wherever I happen to be, you know.
So you had a good view of the Queen?
Yes, we did have a good view of the Queen.
So you saw her go into the town
into
hall?
Into the town
and
hall.
And did you wait for her to
no,
come out?
No, because she was going to be there a long time. So we decided to come away, and I saw the children get home, went back to the car park to get my own car, and came home. But I'd stood for an hour and a half on this leg that doesn't work. Mm. And when I got home, I went indoors, and the dustman had been, and I had to take the boxes. We used to put the food rubbish in boxes in those days. I went out the front door to fetch these boxes in and didn't make the doorstep.
Oh, no.
And fell headlong about that distance right onto the stones on the ground. I couldn't get up. No way I was going to get up.
Dear.
And I was in a courtyard in Lindisfarne Court where I lived, and all these houses around, trying to persuade somebody. I'm lying on the ground, please get me up. Everybody'd been to see the Queen, so everybody was at home making a cup of tea, you know. Nobody. Oh. I was throwing stones at the doors, trying to persuade somebody to help me. And the man opposite came to make his wife a cup of tea, and their kitchen was in the front, and he saw me on the ground. And so he came out and called other people, and we got an ambulance, and off we went to hospital. I'd broken a hip. So I'd broken that hip, I think it was. Anyway, so I had to... They give me a new bottom bit of my hip because it was broken just here. So that didn't help me to walk either.
No.
A year later, while I was still on crutches, I fell at home and broke the other hip.
Oh, my goodness me.
So now you know why I can't walk.
Oh, dear. So you don't really have very fond memories of that day, no. That Queen's visit?
No.
Oh,
if dear. Anybody says, when did you break that your hip, I say, when the Queen came to Malden. Before but, then, Princess Anne came right? to Malden, didn't she?
I don't know. Can't remember.
Something to do with... whether it was to do with the football, but it was down Munden Road where the football things are. And Princess Anne came, and I did go to see her, took some photographs. I don't know when that was, I can't remember. My memory's not very good anymore.
You didn't have a good day, but obviously the children everybody you else took did. With you
yes.
had a really good day
yes,
with the Queen.
Yes, they did, yes.
And they probably have wonderful memories of that
yes,
still.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they will remember.
Well, thank you, Judith, very much. Thank you for everything you've told us and for your time.